somebody must just join. Can I give over, before giving over, can I deal with apologies? I received apologies from the minister, the honorable minister, the deputy minister, the DG. I also received apology for honorable Matemi and honorable Nita. And honorable Smith and honorable Julius. Thank you very much. Honorable Singh.
Chair, I just want to tender apologies that I'll be leaving a bit earlier.
Okay, let's see how it goes, honorable member. Yeah. Can I give over to you for the presentation, or if you want to say some? Yeah, let's allow the introduction. Because there is new people that is not familiar with us. Let me start by myself. I'm Ellen Prince, and I'm chairing this committee. And I'm going to give over to the honorable members to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Omi Singh. I represent the province of KwaZulu-Natal.
I'm Jackie Mofokeng from Gauteng.
Good morning. I'm Boitumelo Moilo from the Northwest Province.
Good morning. My name is Philip Skubutu Mulunga. I'm the committee coordinator for the SREC committee from Gauteng.
Good morning. My name is Luandile Tabula. I'm a committee administrator for the Committee of Sports, Recreation, Arts and Culture in Gauteng Province.
Good morning. My name is Molata Loshikwana. I'm the researcher for the SREC committee in Gauteng.
Good morning. My name is Obrud Gola. I'm from Gauteng Provincial Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning to you and to the Honourable Members and the guests in this Select Committee hearing. My name is Thomas Oftahida. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology, and amongst my responsibilities is the Indigenous Knowledge Systems Portfolio. Thank you, Honourable Chair, for accepting the apologies of the Minister, Deputy Minister and Director General. As you know, they like to lead from the front, but unfortunately they just can't manage today. Thank you. May I ask the rest of my team to introduce themselves?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and the other supporting staff. My name is Yona Seleti. I'm Chief Director for a portfolio that includes Indigenous Knowledge Systems.
Good morning. My name is Tom Suknandan from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Shumi Pango from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I am Carol van Wyk. I'm from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members and colleagues. I am not from the department, but I'm sitting amongst them because I like them. I'm really well. I am your Parliamentary Legal Advisor. I am Barbara Lewis.
Good morning. Khonto Motobe from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning. I'm Charlene Munsami from DST Legal Services.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair, colleagues. My name is Palisen Salomani. I'm from the Northwest Provincial Legislature. I'm the Committee Administrator. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Nomfuzo Daniel, Provincial Liaison Officer for the Northwest Province.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Marisa Sun. I'm from the Free State Legislature.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. I'm Jocelyn Mueti. I'm the liaison officer of the Gauteng province.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Stella Mhlana from Eastern Cape and Soopi office.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Devang Shah. I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group, PMG.
Good morning, members and colleagues. I'm Nduswa Mayambela from Western Cape Provincial Parliament.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. I am Pumelele Sibisi, the committee secretary.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Poscati. I'm the Cornell Advisor for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Amanda Zinlani, the committee assistant.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Safaku. Can you introduce yourself? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Wulifile Safaku. I'm from Northwest. Thank you.
Can we now proceed with the presentation? Giving over to the department for the presentation on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. As we can see by the turnout and the wide range of provinces that are represented here today, there's a wide degree of interest in Indigenous knowledge systems issues, and that's correct, so because it is an area of great strength and pride to South Africa, and the department has been doing a lot of work and has invested a lot of time and effort in trying to promote Indigenous knowledge systems in South Africa, our knowledge about them, and our ability to derive benefit from them for South African communities. The work of this department in Indigenous knowledge goes back to the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Policy, which was approved by Cabinet in 2004. And as a consequence of the establishment of that policy, the approval of that policy, the Department of Science and Technology established the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, NICSO, which is the unit within the department through which our Indigenous knowledge work has been taking place. Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members, you may recall that in August 2016, you held a joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, where we provided you an overview of our Indigenous knowledge work. So we won't preface the presentation on the bill today by that, but I just want to remind you that we have made such a presentation, and as a consequence of the fact that for 14 years, we have been working in this field through the NICSO, the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office. Several years ago, we began to realize that it was necessary to move beyond just the policy as a framework for the work that we're doing in Indigenous Knowledge Systems. It became clear that there was a need for a legislative instrument to enable the department to give effect to all the requirements and expectations of the policy that had been approved by Cabinet in 2004. And so that initiated then the thinking within the department around the drafting of a bill for Indigenous knowledge that would clarify exactly the role of the department and other stakeholders, and that would also legislate certain structures that we have established and that are necessary in order to promote Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous knowledge systems in South Africa, to solidify these structures, to enshrine them in legislation and clarify their roles. So, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, that's really the background to the bill in a nutshell. With your permission, Chair, I would like to hand over shortly to my colleague, Dr. Seleti, who will make a presentation on the bill. Might I just add that as the Honourable Chair and the members will know, this bill has been through very rigorous scrutiny already also in the Select Committee. And in the course of the work that the Portfolio Committee has done on this, excellent teamwork was established between the portfolio committee and its legal supporters in the form of Dr. Lurz in particular and our team. And if the select committee wishes, on the side of the DST, we would be very happy to continue to veil our officials to support the select committee as well in the way that we did this with the portfolio committee. We're in your hands in this regard, but our team is ready to assist you. It might not be quite as many people for all of the meetings, but we will always make sure that you're supported if you wish us to be there. As I said, we've developed, I think, very good experience around this, and that may be of benefit to the select committee's considerations. So if I may hand over to Dr. Saleti.
Thank you very much. Can I just announce that we outside, if anyone feels like having a cup of tea, you're welcome to go and get something. Thank you very much. You can proceed,
Doctor. Honorable Chair and honorable members, this is a major milestone for us to come and appear before you. Considering the significance of this bill. This is what I propose to be the outline for our presentation this morning. But maybe just to remind you what this bill is all about. It is meant to provide for protection, promotion, development, and management of indigenous knowledge, to provide for the establishment of the functions of the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office, to provide for the management of rights of Indigenous knowledge communities, to provide for the establishment and functions of the Advisory Panel on Indigenous Knowledge, and to provide for access and conditions of access to knowledge of Indigenous communities, and to provide for recognition of prior learning, to provide for the facilitation and coordination of indigenous knowledge-based innovation, and finally to provide for the matters incidental thereof. And so to get into this, we'll begin straight away with the policy part of introducing that. The DDG has made reference to the policy, and this policy mentioned the need to develop an intellectual property-like protection of indigenous knowledge. And this is what is called sui generis. It is something which is like. And then the bill was published for public comment in the Government Gazette in 2015 and 2016, respectively. The bill tries to address the following concerns. Basically, the question could be said, what is the mischief that the bill is trying to address? So biopiracy, misappropriation, but it also promotes the registration of indigenous knowledge. It also introduces the recognition of prior learning of practitioners, benefit sharing for communities arising out of their knowledge, and also to feed into the research and development and innovation, and create mechanisms for dispute resolution for communities should there be differences. The legislative process was long, and we're just trying to summarize it. And prior to tabling of the IK bill to cabinet, the DST subjected the draft bill to consultation with national government departments and in all 9 provinces. As expected, a number of responses were received, indicating the significant level of awareness and engagement with the process. The bill was published in 2015 in the Government Gazette. The closing date for submission was 20th of May 2015. We received a number of comments from a range of interest groups, including government department, research institution, academic institutions, and the public, a total of 29, and these were then analyzed. A review team compromising both local and international experts was established. They reviewed the comments and the draft that had been given to them, and the revised bill was drafted for the introduction into the parliamentary process. On 12th of April 2016, the Minister of Science and Technology introduced the bill to the National Assembly.
The bill referred to the joint tagging mechanism on 25th of May, and in terms of rule, joint rule 160, it was classified as a section 76 bill, and hence our presence here today. The Secretary to Parliament referred the bill for comment to the National House of Traditional Leaders on the 2nd of June 2016, and there were comments that came back from there which were integrated, and these were received on the 27th of June. In August of 2016, the committee held a joint workshop, the Select Committee, and this had been referred to as well earlier on. And a number of departments made representations also to the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. So you can see, members, that this has gone through an extensive process. And on March 1st, 2017, the Portfolio Committee had a joint meeting with Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, which resulted in a resolution that an interdepartmental task team be established to work through areas in the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Act of 2013 and the IK Bill, where there were considered to be some overlaps. And from 27 to 31st of March, the committee undertook oversight visit to Southern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Northwest. So they actually interacted with stakeholders to gauge the opinions on that. A redrafted bill was approved by the Portfolio Committee on 13th September 2017, and on 14th of November, the National Assembly approved the bill for concurrence. And now I'll focus more on the content of the bill. As you know, the bill has got 9 chapters, but here we'll go with the clauses, and the clauses are 34 in all in terms of that. So if you have the bill, you could be looking at it as we go through. This is a summary, and as a consequence, it may not contain all the details that are in the clauses in there. We try to get the gist of what each clause is getting to. So I'll begin with that. The clause number 1 includes a range of definitions. You know, what are the topics, the issues that are in the bill? So they are defined right at the beginning. And clause number 2 provides the application of the act to all persons, just to indicate that everyone in South Africa is affected, will be covered, so there's no exemption to this law. Clause number 3, it talks about the objectives, and I have spoken to some of these objectives, but the primary objective of the bill is to protect indigenous knowledge of indigenous communities from unauthorized use, misappropriation, and misuse, and to regulate the fair and equitable distribution of benefits from its commercial use. It also provides mechanism for the recognition of prior learning by through accreditation and certification of indigenous knowledge holders. Clause number 4 allows for the establishment of the National Indigenous Knowledge Systems Office within the department. It's an arm's length part of the DST. And clause number 5, there's a lot of details in there, provides for its duties, powers, and functions. What will it do? And clause number 6, it empowers the minister to appoint a suitably skilled and qualified person to head NICSO, who will be responsible for the administration and general administration of NICSO. Clause number 7 allows for the establishment of an advisory panel comprising representatives of relevant government departments, indigenous knowledge holders, industry, and specialists in the knowledge. So it tries to cater for all stakeholders. And clause number 8, it identifies the role of the advisory panel, which is to advise NICSO on strategic issues around indigenous knowledge and to assist with the mobilization of indigenous communities for the purposes that have been set for. This is an important part because indigenous knowledge needs to involve the knowledge holders themselves in its management and advice in terms of the future. So it's taking it back to the owners or the knowledge. And this can only be done through a representative body called an advisory panel. In clause number 9, we are moving now into the intellectual, like property protection of indigenous knowledge. So it provides for the subject matter under protection within the meaning of section 25 of our constitution. In addition, the subclause provides for indigenous knowledge as property vested in the relevant indigenous communities. So it is a critical part of knowing what is it that is going to be protected. So if you look at that, it is quite elaborate and easy to follow in terms of the subject matter. Clause 10 provides for the duration of protection of subject matter, which will persist for as long as the eligibility criteria set out in clause 11 are met. So there is no easy period to say it will only be for 20 years. As long as the indigenous knowledge exists and is being maintained by the community, it will be protected. Clause number 11, this one looks at the eligibility criteria for protection of the subject matter, namely that indigenous knowledge has to be passed on from one generation to another and intergeneration. It has to be developed and maintained within indigenous communities, and it has to be associated with their cultural and social identity of the indigenous community. So these three criteria is what will really make it possible to know that this is the indigenous knowledge which should be supported, protected. There will be many other claims of knowledge to be protected, but if they don't meet this criteria, then they do not qualify as indigenous knowledge. So it's an important clause within this legislation. Clause 12 affirms the custodianship of indigenous knowledge eligible for protection, and it is vested in the trustee of the indigenous community. This is also probably an important concept to understand, that indigenous knowledge is passed from generation to generation, so it can't be claimed by a living person as its personal property. It's a collective, and therefore that is vested in the trustee on behalf of the community where it is coming from. Clause number 13 provides for indigenous communities holding indigenous knowledge to have the exclusive right to any benefits arising from its commercial use be acknowledged as its source and limit. This is the most novel of the provisions of this proposed legislation. It vests the right directly into the communities. Other intellectual property rights tend to vest the rights in third parties, the parties that are using the indigenous knowledge. And in this particular case, it's a direct co-relationship with the owners of indigenous knowledge being given the right to deny or authorize its use. It's another important milestone in this legislation. In clause 14, it proposes the accreditation of assessors and sets out an application process. Indigenous knowledge holders don't go to a formal school. So this knowledge is passed on through different areas. So how do we recognize that knowledge? So in this bill, it is proposing to set up a system that will recognize that as prior learning and certify them. Clause 15 provides for persons wishing to register their qualifications as an indigenous knowledge practitioner to be certified. And this could be in many fields. It could be in traditional healing, and it could be in many fields, but these designations must be registered. Clause 16 provides for the establishment of a register of designations where persons other than the indigenous community or individuals within that indigenous community may access information. This must be a transparent process, so people must know what these designations are, and therefore it will be available through this provision of Clause 16. Clause 17 provides for the establishment of a registration office for indigenous knowledge. The knowledge that needs to be protected, to be promoted, to be developed or commercialized needs to be registered We need to know what this knowledge is. So clause number 17 provides a process through which this knowledge should be registered. And clause number 18 provides for the appointment of a suitably qualified person as the curator for the registration of the indigenous knowledge. And clause number 19 provides for the creation and maintenance of a system of registration of indigenous knowledge by NICSO. Once this knowledge is registered, it has to be used continuously. So there has to be a structure that maintains its databases and the processes involved in it. And that's what this clause number 19 is talking about, providing a model for sustainability so that it doesn't stop. Clause number 20 provides for a trustee to apply to the curator for the registration of indigenous knowledge. Under this sub-clause, the curator may approve or deny the application subject to any conditions or limitations. So if it does not meet the criteria of indigenous knowledge, it may not be registered. So that's what this provision is giving such powers. And clause 21 provides for the curator to make the register available for inspection to the public. What is the knowledge that has been recorded which is in there? And I just want to emphasize, this is like a catalog which tells you this is what is in the knowledge system. The knowledge itself is protected. You can't access it. People cannot give you in the knowledge and then you make it open to everyone. So it is only a title of what knowledge it is that will be in the public domain. But the rest of the contents, they have intellectual property, potential, and therefore they need to be protected. And clause 22 provides for a certificate issued by the curator in respect of any record. Once communities and individuals have registered their knowledge, they must have a paper that shows to them that this knowledge has been registered, proof that this knowledge has been registered. And it can be passed down from family members if the people registered are long gone. And clause 23 provides for register to be a constructive notice in any proceedings. Should there be a court case arising out of this and there is a dispute around the material aspect of the knowledge, so this register that will be created can be used then in any proceedings, including a court case, as evidence of the information. Clause 24 provides for an interested person applying to amend the register in a prescribed manner. Should there have been any changes, so there's a process that's been created. And clause 25 provides for the facilitation and coordination by NICSO of all indigenous knowledge activities which relates to the commercial utilization of indigenous knowledge. There has to be some formal processes that people want to use indigenous knowledge would go through. And clause 25 provides for that. Clause 26 affords opportunities for any person who intends to use this indigenous knowledge to apply in a prescribed manner for a license. So if you want to use that knowledge in the development of a product which will be commercialized, you need to license that knowledge. You can't get it for free, has been the case. It needs to be licensed. And the user will enter into a license agreement with the trustee and of the community. In addition, the clause also provides for exceptions and limitations. Under what conditions might we exempt anyone from the use of a license? So that is also stipulated in terms of the legal provision. And then clause 27 provides for the minister to appoint members of the dispute resolution committee on an ad hoc basis to resolve any dispute arising from this bill. Basically, instead of people rushing through to the courts, which raises the costs for both parties, you provide a dispute resolution mechanism as a way of trying to mitigate and find a solution. So this is been provided in clause 27. And clause 28 provides for offenses and penalties. Should someone break the law knowingly in terms of what has been there, there should be penalties and consequences for that. and that has been the case. In the past, a lot of people have misappropriated and taken indigenous knowledge without any penalties. So this introduces the act of penalties. Clause 29 sets out the process and conditions for the protection of indigenous knowledge resources originating from foreign jurisdiction. This is a transnational arrangement. Examples, we have indigenous knowledge that may be found in Namibia, that we find in South Africa, like the Devil's Club. So how do you manage those kind of processes? Or it may even be someone from Afghanistan who has come with indigenous knowledge in this country and they want to practice. So this particular law makes a provision for a mutual recognition of such an act. And Clause 30 provides for multiple claims to indigenous knowledge. There might be a Sotho-speaking group, and we also find a Zulu, and Xhosa, and they all use the same kind of knowledge for a particular a solution. How do we manage those rights? So this Clause 30 provides for the management of multiple claims which may be on the same process. And Clause 31 grants the minister powers to make regulations. All these laws that we're looking up about will require regulations. And the minister has been given the right to do that. And Clause 32 pertains to the bill in relation to others in terms of the standing of this bill in relation to other bills. What is the standing? And this is where we have had a lot of support from our Parliamentary Advisory Committee, as they are aware of most of these things that are happening. And Clause 33 provides for compliance within 12 months from the effective date. Laws are not implemented retrospectively. We can't implement this law and say we'll take it to 20 years back when my grandfather's traditional medicine was misappropriated. No, it begins from the time when you enact them. And you provide for a 12-month transition. For those that are using indigenous knowledge, which were acquired before, and it's being giving them products and also monetary benefit, then they need to use that 12 months to register so that it is formal. And Chair, I'm happy to say that clause number 34 is the last clause. It provides for a short title of that. And we are here in terms of financial implication for this. It is envisaged that NICSO will operate under its current budget. So, should it be approved by you, it should be ready to run without necessarily asking for extra resources for this. And finally, the law state advisors and the Department of Science and Technology are of the opinion that this bill should be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 76 of the Constitution. And hence we humbly come to you to submit this for as part of our process. So I thank you on behalf of the department for granting us this opportunity to present this bill from our perspective, and we are willing to make any comments. I must say that the PC process has improved the quality of this bill, and it is readable. And something that ordinary people in the street could pick up and understand what it's all about. I thank you.
And I thank you, Doctor, for the presentation. Very straightforward, like you're saying. Anyone on the street can even see what is in the bill. Yeah, I have the privilege to attend the event in Mpumalanga, where I saw some of the practices in real. And a lot of issues came out while we were walking there, moanings and all the pains and the complaints. However, I think we are very excited that this bill must go through. Last night we had our whip, our chairperson's meeting, where we had to say what bills we want to do in this term. So that was one of the bills that I proposed on my portfolio side that must go through. It depends on the provinces. They do have their own programs in time. But safe to say, we as the NCOP must also make sure, because of the importance of the bill, to see how we also will manage the Lemosa judgment issue, to make sure that we have proper participation of the communities, because we don't want this thing to come back to say there was not proper participation. But within our time frames, we will see how fast we can deal with the bill, because Parliament will not be here for long. We are going to be outside to do political work for the coming election. So it's a short year, it's not a long year. However, I'm going to give over to... good morning, Honourable Malambo. This is Honourable Malambo, coming from Gauteng. And I'm glad you are here, because your chairperson, sitting next to you, the acting chair, is here since this morning very early, but I reported the bus strikes that you was holding up in the...
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. Maybe she sleeps around town.
Okay, thank you very much for making your way here. I'm going to allow the honourable members to post questions for clarity, or if you want anything to ask, or something that you picked up between the communities out there on the bill already. I recognize the acting chair of Gauteng, Honourable Faku, Honourable member of Northwest, in that order. And I really need our people to engage in this bill, so that we, when the bill is going to the provinces, you can guide our people before that what to look at and what to raise, a bit of education. Because sometimes you experience people don't understand what issues to raise and concerns, what you want to see in the bill, the outcome of the bill. So thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think it's making us to understand better. I just have a few questions, and I'm thinking that this runs through many portfolio committees, that on the 24th February 2015, it was actually gazetted. And you look at indigenous knowledge, and you ask yourself, who does it actually be able to make them understanding? It's mostly blacks or African in particular. But the bill, does it reach them? And most of the time, the bill is in English or is in Afrikaans. So looking at this bill, that is very important. And you say that you have a total of 29 written comments and 13 public engagement meetings were held. One would want to know, in all the 9 provinces, can you provide the list so that if I'm in Gauteng, I should know where were you in Gauteng? And was also, because you can see that I also called my researcher to tell me that, were you aware? Because if you are having a legislature, they should go where you are to be able to understand what is happening, because it impacts on our people. And for those of us with background of education and understanding what indigenous knowledge is all about and how it impacts in the lives of people, I'm wondering. And I'm going to say that we have to be very serious about public participation. It's a mandate.
It's a constitutional mandate. And I'm saying this in Gauteng because we have an experience that one of the regulations ended up in court, as the doctor was saying, that we don't want any matter to go to the court at the end to have an ad hoc committee. It's because we couldn't, the department couldn't produce a list of public participation, and also we need to look at things in a different way, that a gazette doesn't reach our people. And I'm saying that in this particular one, what is it that you can do to empower us? Because I'm now looking at my leader in the NCOP here, and I said to him, where did you come? Where did you come to the province? Are you aware? And he said, no. So that should come, actually. And I'm sure the understanding should be, before you gazette, share with us so that we spread it for you before it goes there, because the gazette, we are all aware, it doesn't reach our people. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Safa.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks to the latter speaker. Section 76 bill affects the interest of provinces. The six-week cycle is a very, very short cycle. That is why we normally submit to the chair also to make provision. However, one should appreciate the extensive consultation that has been made according to the presentation. As the committee, we've got the responsibility to make sure that we reach out all provinces, all districts in provinces. So there is no shortcut to the process. We have got an experience with another bill from the sister committee, which we are all members here, the MPRDA bill, where, as the chairperson has mentioned, the Lamosa judge. So we don't want to experience that challenge. So indeed, we'll have to make sure that. But we're looking also at the time frame. For how long are we going to be here in the parliament now? And if we don't complete our business, the legacy that we'll be leaving to those that will be here in 2019 or after that is also going to be another challenge. But really, we do appreciate the presentation, and also that the legal support will always be available. That is also the point that we will indeed. But going to a question, the establishment of the national office, are there not going to be also some provincial or regional registration offices? Because this should go to the people. Normally, we'll be having this in cities, whereas the interest here is of people in the periphery, okay, which make it not accessible to the very same people that is meant to assist. Or the information will be electronically, where the majority of the people that are in possession of this indigenous knowledge system are even illiterate. So how do they have access to these offices? Maybe that's another point that you can clarify that. The chair, let me just pause and give to my colleagues. Also. Thank you.
Thank you, over to you, ma'am. Northwest.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me firstly appreciate the presentation. And maybe applaud the committee by inviting us as provinces to come and take part before you go to provinces and do public participation. Chair, some of the things have been covered by my colleagues. You see, when you talk public participation, remember we are in provinces, and when we go to public participation, we sometimes get challenges of departments, provincial departments, not having an understanding of explaining what you are saying to us today, which is something that, as national, you need to improve on. You know, it becomes a problem that when you go to a public participation, you get someone from the department who doesn't even know how to explain that to the communities. And it poses a challenge to us as members of the different legislatures. So I'm highlighting this so that when it goes down, we are able to deal with that as national. Send people who have knowledge, who have an insight, or maybe being able to explain thoroughly to our communities. Because these are some of the things that causes the litigation, which is sometimes unnecessary. It's only an understanding. So I'm just saying that, taking a cue from my colleagues, that, you know, public participation is important. It will help us a lot if our people knows and understand what the bills entails. Then we won't have any other thing. They will even be able to help us to implement what is it that is in the bill. I'm looking at the where you saying that process 5, where you talk of the your committee taking oversight in, you know, you were in an oversight mission in different provinces. At that point, I was still a chairperson of the committee, and I was asking my administrator whether you know anything about this. He doesn't know. And I then concluded that it might be that you spoke to the department, of which I know that even the department can be communicated to, but it's very important that you also include the legislative sector, because we are now the ones who go in to talk to our communities, make sure that whatever comes from this side, it's able to be implemented. You know, when the department goes there, they just present and expect us to make sure that we make people understand or get a buy-in. So I'm raising this that, you know, going to provinces, yes, I really appreciate the fact that you went to provinces. But it's best that at times when you go out there, inform the legislature so that even if the chairperson is not, one person from the portfolio committee is part of the process. So that tomorrow when it comes back, we are able to have an ownership of what transpired on that day. The other factor that I wanted to raise is that one that Honorable Spako has raised on the establishment of registration offices. You correctly said in your presentation that those who register, you don't need to go to school when you deal with people who have knowledge in indigenous process, you know. And I share the same sentiments that it will be important that whatever we do, the good thing that we want to do in this bill
must also yield good results. The meaning of what I'm saying is that in terms of the offices that you're going to establish, we need to go to the grassroots levels, because you know for a fact that they are the people who knows, who have a knowledge of indigenous. They have a background of that. And we don't want to see them being exploited. Remember, if you don't have offices at the grassroots levels or regions or provinces, you expose our people to be exploited, because there will be those who will see this as a money-making scheme. Now that it's in the bill and is gazetted, they will take advantage of that. They will take advantage of people, because our people don't have offices next to them where they have an official. I don't know how you're going to deal with it. Who will be able to assist them on the spot, so that whatever they do, they know. Yes, we're going to go to provinces, we're going to go to our regions, we're going to go to our districts, explain it to them thoroughly. But if the office is not around the vicinity where it is near to them, then it defeats the whole purpose of what we want to do. So I just want to highlight that. Also to check on your clause 18. Yes, you're talking about providing of a suitable skilled and qualified person as a curator, you know, this clause. I just want to check the criteria that you're going to use. Remember, we are, as public reps, making sure that we make our people not to be exploited. That's point number one. So if you have somebody who is qualified, then even the criteria must also be explained to our people, so that when you deal with it, at least you know. If a person comes and gives you information about this knowledge that he has or she has, you are able to say, but this is the criteria that we're using. Not everybody can come and do that, because correctly you said people can know somebody or who has such a knowledge and go to him and want to use that knowledge as if it's his or her own knowledge. So I just wanted to check that. Lastly, Chair, or the second last, on clause 26, I just want to check who's going to facilitate that on the licensing part of it. I know for a fact that you highlighted that there are offices are the offices are going to be there, but then we also need to explain, because these are some of the questions that are going to be asked when we go for public participation, that, okay, you come with this bill to us, you want us to pass this bill, and we don't want our people to reject bills on the basis that they don't understand or it doesn't cover the factors that will help them to go forward. So now, who's going to facilitate that? Is it the officials that you're going to employ in those various offices, or who's going to facilitate the agreement, licensing agreement? Because this, I must say, we know people can be shrewd. We know people can do business with anything. And if they see this, they seize the moment to say, now I can do business. Somebody will open his office and say, people must come and bring all this knowledge to him with a fee, or he takes it, whichever way. So I just wanted to check. Lastly, Chair, and on clause 30, on the claims, it's something also that will be exploited by those who will want to make money from it. Is there going to be a facilitator? Are you going to give us in those offices people who have expert in dealing with these things? Because once we miss the point, I can tell you this is a good bill that will help our people, but if we miss some other things in it, that we don't make it watertight, then we're going to make our people to be exploited. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there someone, another bite? Okay. Honorable Nambu, we'll give you the chance, because I also have.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department. And on what the colleagues have raised in terms of our people being exploited, you know that we do have criminals. Will always take a chance to make money. So the minister has on clause 31, he's been granted, or she or he has been granted, powers to make regulations. But also on top of that, because maybe those regulations might be regulations that will be applicable to those offices that will be established. But there is another suggestion that maybe if an association can be formed to look also into the non-exploitation of our people, you know, as some kind of a security kind of a measure, you know, that will have a closer link with that, those offices that will be formed around the country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable member. Yeah, mine is also on, I agree with the honorable member who was asking for a list of areas which you cover. I must say that I think that is, I don't know the department. The normal practice is we advertise in all 11 languages. Is that a practice which you follow? In Mpumalanga, I can recall there was documents in Isikosa, other languages, in Zulune, available for the people who was there in the area. I'm not going to speak on their behalf. I just trying to say that I think they did that thing, because like we discussed it previously during our presentations, we asked also that they must make sure, because it's mostly black people it is affected by this knowledge. One thing that I want to check with the department, do you have systems in place? To check
the name of the lady who has spoken.
Whether people, the claims that people were making there in Malanga, that the researchers were stealing their ideas. Do you have systems in place to deal with it, that we can make sure that people cannot come and do that kind of allegations in future? I just want to understand in the bill, because that might come out even when we're going to do oversight, public participation. There was claims of a woman who was saying that someone else was stealing her idea and came and you know, register it. And there's that kind of thing that came out, negativities around already out there. How many practitioners do you have already in place who do the practices now?
because what I picked up, there's already people in place. And I must say, honorable members, what I picked up on this bill is not to register the knowledge, but it's also about money making. Because people is doing all the skin things, healthy things for tablets that you can take for whatever, marunga of, I don't know whether I pronounce it, moringa plant, they gave us there. I bought some people bring, I bought here, the members. So there's a lot of money into it. And one need to make sure that there must be systems in place to do the checks and balances of all these things, because already the allegations is out there making against. I don't know whether it is true or not true, but that's what they told us when we were there. So yeah, I was saying the first time when we was dealing with this bill, if you could recall, my great grandfather was also doing this thing at the time, and I was very upset because for me it's about black magic thing, you know, you don't understand this black magic, and the children was teaching us about your father is a Sangoma and whatever your grandfather. So I'm glad that in all of that there was really things that work for the people. Now they can come and they can come and register, and people can develop it in something better that they can go and promote to the health of our people. Yeah, I think that was the main thing. The other things was being covered. And then I must also say, it depends, in my view, of us, of the provinces, what areas you want to cover. I think you must go back and identify that rural, deep rural places where you know that our people need this knowledge, to know about this indigenous knowledge bill. So really, I think the department did, when we attended that thing, they buses in people from all the rural areas in that area. So they try to cover, but they cannot do all, everything. It is going to depend on us. I just want to understand the relationship between province and then local government. Can we bring it down to local government? The councillors who is closer to the people, who can deal with it. I'm just asking because it is really, it is not possible that we will cover each and every corner. Therefore, in my view, except us as members of parliament who is going to do our constituency work in your area can also cover, but we need to work together with the local government for us to be able to reach all the corners in South Africa. Thank you. Over to you. Oh, Honourable Safaku, you want the next bite? Before I'm giving all the things.
I think the question of exploitation cannot be overemphasized. Because indeed there's an opportunity of some consultants that will be running to grab the opportunity. Okay. You know, social development, society is developing. Culture is also not static, it's developing. So we are seeing other beliefs, systems emerging, where people will tell you that they can heal you by turning you into an animal now eating the grass or so. Okay. So really, the way in which protection should be made should look at this evolution of culture. Okay. there is a maxim or a tenet of some other structures that will say nothing for us without us. So I agree with my colleague that indeed there should be some sort of organization that should be encouraged to be established at grassroots, provincial and national, that will also help and assist in whether there will be some challenges before we can even keep on rushing to courts. Such structures should, of course, be encouraged to participate. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can we ask a question that I forget to answer? To ask is about the licenses of the plant. How is going to work with this bill? Is it still the provinces is responsible for issuing licenses if people have to go and harvest the plants in the field? Or are they you going to do the licensing? When we're asking questions, you're going to, coming up with more. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair, for allowing the brainwave. Thanks, Chair, for allowing the brainwave. Chair, I think there's something that we want them also to check on the medical council or the medical control. We are aware that most of the indigenous, even plants, and used by the indigenous people, have been stolen. And one will be an example of the African potato. I won't go into the list of them, and the same as the one that you spoke about, Moringa. Moringa, many people knew about it, it's everywhere, but there should also be an encouragement of how you patent them and the association in that regard, as my colleagues were saying. If you regulate, the association must be able to deal with them in all provinces so that we even stop, if they have to modify it, but it must benefit the African people as royalties. Thank you.
Very much. The question is also to claim that it's their royalties, but we leave it there. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and the honourable members for your questions and your comments. I would like to just quickly allocate to my colleagues certain areas of responsibility so they can gather their thoughts while I make a few introductory responses to the inputs that have been made, if I may. So Ms. Pangle will talk to the committee about the consultation process that we have followed so far. She knows all the details, and she'll communicate her understanding of this to you. Then I will ask Ms. Carol van Wyk to talk about our national recordal system and the provincial centres that we've established to record Indigenous knowledge. She'll talk about that. I will ask Mr. Sukhanandan to talk about all the sort of licensing issues that were raised, the concerns around licensing and providing support for licensing. And then I will ask Dr. Saleti to talk about the concerns about exploitation. Honourable Mofokeng just lastly was talking about this. And the way that the IK community, Indigenous Knowledge Community, is organised. The Honourable Mlambo raised some concerns about this. Are there structures that where they organise themselves to interface with these processes and with the structures that we've put in place? So Dr. Saleti will also cover those things. So honourable members, thank you for the issues that you've raised. They were broadly grouped in the way that I've just identified now, and uppermost in your mind was the question of communication and consultation. And that clearly is because you take very seriously the substance of the bill and the matter that is at hand. That's why you are so concerned about it. You don't want this important legislation to be tripped up for matters inappropriate consultation. So you'll get details on that from my colleague Shumi Pango just now. But
let me make the point that we are at your disposal to assist provinces and relevant provincial competencies in further engagements and consultations with your local communities. You will know your local communities and their needs much, much better than we can as a national department of some 400 people who sits in Pretoria. So we're at your disposal, and we want to thank honorable members and chair. We have already received requests from Gauteng and from Western Cape, I think, for us to come and brief the provincial committees in those provinces. We would welcome similar requests from Northwest and the other provinces. Free State, I think, was here as well, and Eastern Cape. We're certainly at your disposal and would be very happy to come and brief your central political structures or legislative structures, as well as if you identify the need for consultations at the local level, we're at your disposal. But as I said, it's important that we respond to your guidance on this. So we're available for that. I think let me hand over to Ms. Pango then to give you more details about the process that we have already engaged in, so that you can assess to what extent that may support the responsibility that the Select Committee now has around this portfolio, because you have an extensive program for further consultation as well, which we're very happy to support in any way that we can.
Already asked write a letter for extension because of the importance of this.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. And Gosmomchek. Regarding the consultations after the bill was gazetted, what we did, because we were also mindful of the fact that not everybody was privy to the gazetting of the bill and what was expected in terms of providing inputs and comments on the bill. So what we did was to run a parallel process where we went to all 9 provinces for some kind of awareness around the bill, so that whatever comments made are made from an informed position. How we did that, I think my colleague Carol will touch on that. How we did that was to identify the IKS documentation centers that we have established in the provinces, because they are rooted right in the rural areas where our communities reside. So we used those venues during that bill drive so as to make sure that the word gets into the communities where this bill is of utmost importance. As I indicated, we went to all 9 provinces. We got comments that were fed into the bill as it was redrafted after the comments were received. So when the bill was revised, it took into consideration the inputs and comments that we received from the provinces. So we did not rely only on the gazetted bill. That's point number one. The second thing that we did was to meet with the National House of Traditional Leadership. And I think that also answers the question in terms of whether we are going to leave this at provincial, how about local and the districts. Because the reason why we approached the National House was to make sure that we make use of their constituencies and their own way of mobilizing their communities. In other words, over and above the IKS documentation centers that we have been using as a catchment for the communities, we also wanted to take advantage of the venues that are used by the traditional leaders when they hold meetings in their area, because we were also mindful of the fact that our IKSDCs may not be accessible to all the communities because of the vastness of some of the provinces, because we have one IKS documentation center per province. But if we go through the National House, we will be able then to access those communities that are not necessarily in the vicinities of the IKS Documentation Center. And that also responds to the fact that the Department of Science and Technology, as we might all know, is only at national. So those IKS Documentation Centers assist us in having a footprint also in the rural areas of the provinces. In terms of the explanation of the bills, as it was alluded to by the honorable member from Northwest, I think, what we did is we have even now translated the bill, this IKS bill that is in front of us, in the different languages, so that if, for instance, we are in Free State, we are able to talk to the bill in the language of the area. If we are in Western Cape, we must talk to the bill in the language of the area, so that when they read the bill, they read it in their own language and they are able to understand. And we made sure that we have people who are conversant on the language, so that when we do the presentations, we do the presentations in the different languages. We are able to respond to the questions, and the questions are talking directly to the issues that the communities are concerned about. We have the list of the provinces and the areas that we did the consultation on, including the comments that we received from those provinces. And this is something that we've been doing on an ongoing process, and we are also planning that we are going to continue with the public awareness on the IK bill even after the NCOP process, so that whatever communities were unable to respond, they still get a chance to make inputs on the bill before it becomes an act. One of the reasons why we are doing that, it is because of the different operational elements that are in the bill. The National Record System, for instance, that my colleague is going to talk about, it also needs public awareness. The accreditation, which is the recognition of prior learning, also needs public awareness. The office itself and its function, it needs public awareness, because if we don't do that, people will not know that there is an office and what this office is doing and what its functions are in relation to their knowledge and all of that. So we are planning to have an ongoing awareness on the bill before it becomes an act, because we know that there might be elements that are critical to the communities that are not captured in the bill now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm Carol van Dyk. I will respond to the questions on the registration office or what you have heard now about the documentation centers. Yes, there is going to be registration offices in all the provinces. Currently, what we've done over the past 10 years, we've been piloting this registration by establishing what we call documentation centers in provinces. Now, these documentation centers, although they are established at a university or whether it's at an NGO institution, they facilitate communities to document indigenous knowledge within the community, so they move around. The documentation of IK of indigenous knowledge is in the vernacular, and the process follows the protocol of the traditional leadership. Currently have 60 communities that are participating in the national recordal system across the country. If I may mention, as deep rural as Umhlabuya, Lingana, to Platfontein, to Otsuan, to Kala, to Kofimbaba, and to Sukulumi in the Gauteng province. What we've done is we've got about 70 IK recorders which we have picked from the communities that currently are participating, and we've trained them on protocols, traditional protocols, how to interview, how to record, non-disclosure agreements, prior informed consent, explaining to the communities that they interact with or get to how your information will be registered. Now, in each of these communities that are participating, we go through, as I mentioned, through the traditional leadership. We do have MOUs with the district traditional leaderships of different areas. For instance, in KwaZulu-Natal, we've got two centers there. We've got an MOU with the King Sekwayo District Municipality, as well as with Etuquini and the traditional leadership. They basically form part of steering the process as well. So there's a accounting committee that is set up through your IKES Documentation Center that reports to the traditional leadership on how the project is going, how many communities have participated. In that set, I need to say that as well as the what we do when we document, and we have received this when we get to communities, nothing about us without us. So when going into a community, it's about how do they own collectively the knowledge. You've listened to the three criteria, so that is further explained before you go and register IK in a community so that they understand the aspects of the bill further. So basically, it is a voluntary system. We do not force people to register, but they need to understand that if you don't register, your knowledge cannot be protected. And it's a constant request that we get from communities. Our claims have been stolen and all of that. And communities normally, they come to the conclusion that it's because they haven't documented or recorded the indigenous knowledge system. So this whole registration of IK, when it moves from the one community to the other community, what is left behind is a register that has the knowledge of that particular community which is entrusted to the trustee. So basically they know what knowledge holdings they have. That knowledge holding is also then uploaded or registered in the Provincial Documentation Center, which is then also uploaded at Central, which will have a bird's eye view of what is happening in the provinces. I must also say that most of the communities that we have interacted with is very active and keen on wanting to register their indigenous knowledge, and we have received some requests even to come, but obviously with budget constraints and all that, we're also looking at how do we expand the system so that we have the provincial governments to also contribute or to own that particular system as a provincial system as a knowledge management system in terms of the protection of indigenous knowledge. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I just feel I need to just emphasize a little bit of what Ms. Van Dijk has just said and brag a little bit about this. The honorable members will, I'm sure, know that intellectual property, things like patents, are usually registered in the SIPS office, and there's standard protocols for how that's done. There's forms, they might be online, but there's standard forms. It's a well-established practice that everybody plays to. What our team and the people working on the supporting the department have had to do is they've had to conceptualize a system on how do you actually register indigenous knowledge, because there wasn't such a system and there was no systematic way of doing it. So they've had to design this concept of how to do it, and then through the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, the CSIR, they had to design an IT system to do this. And most of this knowledge, as the honorable members will know, is verbal. It's in people's heads. It's not written down. There's not long papers in scientific journals and so on, which you can use as records and proof and evidence. So this entire system had to be conceptualized intellectually and then designed on an IT base in order for these registration officers to be able to do what they do, so that the community can go there and essentially dump all their knowledge into the system somehow. And this was all, I think, largely or exclusively South African designed. They've never said this, but I think we're probably world leaders in this. And I just felt it's necessary to emphasize the science and technology and innovation aspects that have underpinned this work. I'd like to now hand over to Mr. Sukhanandan on the legislative issues and concerns that have been raised.
Thank you, DDG.
I'm going to start off first with the issue of license. The question was, who's going to do it? The licensing process will be facilitated by NICSO, and perhaps I should just indicate to you that NICSO currently does exist within the department, but when the bill is going to be legislated, we will migrate as an arm's length unit from the department, because in any event, NICSO will regulate the department as well. So within the umbrella of NICSO, we have four pillars. The first pillar is regulation. The second pillar is accreditation. The third one is the registration. And the fourth one is the commercialization. So the licensing is the tail end of a whole process. So when a research and development process commences, it commences with the disclosure of information. And that disclosure of information is subjected to a prior informed consent agreement. Okay? So when the community and the researchers enter into a prior informed consent agreement, then it leads to a benefit sharing agreement. When the research actually starts, then it translates into a material transfer agreement. And the tail end, the commercial phase of the whole pipeline is the licensing agreement. And these license agreements, they will be standard. The only difference omission in the licensing agreement will be the royalty percentages. So that is a negotiated issue between the researcher and the trustee. So yes, there will be experts manning the regulatory pillar of NICSO. So that's the first issue on licensing. Chair then asked the question on systems. Are there any systems? Yes, there are three systems. When a researcher or a scientist or an academic accesses that information via the National Recordal System, you will also be subjected to a number of agreements, a number of legal frameworks. So that's the first system. The second system, when the researcher uses a biological resource, he has to apply for a permit, and that permit is issued by the Department of Environmental Affairs. So that's the second system. And the third system is your patent system. So when you apply for a patent, Section 25 of the Patent Act indicates that you have to disclose the geographical origin of the plant, you have to disclose where you got that knowledge from, you have to disclose whether there are any benefit-sharing agreements in place, and did the researcher get prior informed consent. So, Chair, there are three systems in place. Then the question of multiple claims. The issue of multiple claims will be handled by the dispute resolution committee. So, for example, and this committee will be an ad hoc committee. So whenever there is a multi-claim, then we will set up this dispute resolution committee. So in terms of the multiple claims, that will be attended by the dispute resolution committee. The issue regarding patents on plants, there are no patents on plants. Plants are protected by the Plant Varieties Act. So you can only get a patent from the knowledge that's associated with the plant that leads to an invention. Okay. So patents are there is no such thing as a patent on a biological resources. I think that's about it for my friend.
Just one additional comment. Mr. Sipanandan has given the members and the chair an overview of the legislative interventions that are in place to protect the indigenous knowledge. There were also some questions about how do we promote commercialization so that the communities benefit from the indigenous knowledge that they possess and which they then register on the recordal system. So the department has got a number of programs in place that support the commercialization of indigenous knowledge. We have a unit in the department called IKS Bioinnovation that specifically looks at supporting communities who own indigenous knowledge who want to commercialize it in the form of nutraceuticals or pharmaceuticals, for example.
So we have a unit within the department that does works in this area, and the Technology Innovation Agency, which is one of the entities that reports to the department, also has programs to support communities in this regard. So there are a number of examples that we could brief the committee on in due course of successful support to communities in commercializing indigenous knowledge and developing sustainable livelihoods on that. I'd now ask Dr. Seleti to finalize the comments.
Thank you very much, DDG and the Chair. Maybe just to link up on the last point around the bioinnovations. It is important for people that make claims that those claims are subject to verification, that they are the claims that they make, that they are able to cure or do, are proven. So let's take the example of Moringa. There have been quite a number of institutions that have been involved in the research on Moringa. The University of KwaZulu-Natal, Wits University, and all that. And they were part of what the DDG has referred to as IKS bioinnovation. And so the whatever claims are coming out of Moringa would be on that. And there are such products which have come through the system that have to be verified. So to a certain extent, we have the processes for doing that. What we lack, hopefully we'll get in future, are the monies that are required for investment in those processes. Because a clinical trial is very expensive. And so we'll need to be looking at how we complete that value chain. So we do not support any claims that do not go through a verification process. Now, the verification process I've just referred to is a scientific verification process. Now, in the National Record System, there are also two verification processes. One is called the steering committee of community members in the area in which the National Record System exists. So it will include traditional leaders, community members, who will then say, yes, these people are making claims. They truly exist. And that the knowledge that they have, this is their areas of competence. So that's the beginning of this verification process. Right at the grassroots level, there's a mechanism that is put through for that. There is also a national record system as of another feature of verification. The names normally come in indigenous languages. They are not necessarily scientific names. As you know, our courts tend to rely a lot more on scientific names and all that. So we have partnered with SANBI, the South African Biodiversity Institute, to provide the scientific verification of these names that are coming from the community so that a specific plant species is identified. Now, we've done these three elements of verification because we have to provide legal certainty. There should not be any room of doubting any of our evidence should we go through a court case. So that's the platform that we've built to ensure that legal certainty is provided, and also to ensure that the interest of communities are protected, and hence the first step of a steering committee in the community where the knowledge is coming from. So these have been put in as ways of, and the reason why I need to link this up, if you have to stop biopiracy and also misappropriation, you need to empower the communities right from the community at the level at which the knowledge is being collected. So in our view, the National Record System is the first port of protection because they are then educated about the needs to protect this knowledge as they sign the agreements for prior informed consent or material benefit agreements. This is where it must begin. It cannot only begin at the market level. It must begin when people are sourcing the knowledge. It must be protected. We must also emphasize, Chair, that the National Record System has a very excellent security system. It has three levels of security. The first one, it will allow everyone to look at the claims as a catalog entry, nothing more. If you want to know more about a particular claim, if you are a scientist or a businessman, then you have to go into legal agreements. And all these have been downloaded electronically on the system, but they will also be available in indigenous languages for different provinces at that particular level. But we've consulted top legal firms in the country who have worked with us, and we've got these systems in place. We've benchmarked them with the international standards. So we are really at the cutting edge when it comes to that. So that too becomes a level of preventing misappropriation from the people. What Mr. Sukhanandan and Ms. Van Veek should have mentioned is that this involves interdepartmental cooperation. The DST does not work alone. It works with the Department of Environmental Affairs, Trade and Industry, Agriculture, and many. And so through this agreement, through these meetings, we've agreed to create a one-stop shop. So people that want to have access to biological materials normally would go to DEA and collect the permits. Now, and people would want to go for a license when NICS is established, supposed to go to DST. So we've done all this and created as one shop. So if they call at NICSO, they should be able to put in the application for a permit. They should be able, if they are commercial people, should be able to get a license to use the knowledge. And the database is the National Record of System. That will be the anchor to the system. And so we have also probably working at another level of working on misappropriation. The section of the bill goes beyond any other laws in providing the right to. So it doesn't become the right of NICSO. It becomes the right of the knowledge holders to protect their knowledge and also to sue anyone who has abused their knowledge. So whereas at the moment that right is not in law. There's no law at the moment in this country, or probably even globally, where a knowledge holder has been given the right to do that. So this is a special right, and it's a special innovation that has come up. And this is because we participate in the World Intellectual Property Organization, where we've been developing these concepts, and we'll be one of the first people to apply this in a legislation. So then if we do succeed at the Intellectual Property Organization, it means that everywhere they go, they can be prosecuted for having stolen knowledge from a knowledge holder. It will become a law globally. So we are working at the national level. We are also working at the international level to make sure that our knowledge holders will be protected. So I've provided a response which says, scientifically, we are protecting them. At the community level, we're providing structures. But then there's only one question where you asked, what organizational framework would you put in to protect this the people? The knowledge recorder system begins to be also a register of knowledge holders. But it doesn't create them as an organization. What we've created is a forum for all the people that are involved in the collection of this information to have an annual forum where they exchange their benchmarks and all that, so that together we are operating from one page, so that each province does not go in its own way. So that becomes a different kind of a form of organization. The recognition of prior learning, which is another pillar of the legislation, for people who haven't gone to school, but they are knowledgeable. They are surgeons, they are birth attendants, they are special agriculturists with special knowledge. So we will create what we are calling disciplines of competence. So it becomes an organization of specialists in that area to organize themselves, to provide ethical guidelines for themselves, to discipline people within their own organization who do not conform, but also to protect and defend their own interests and promote their own interests. So we realize that the the department or NICSO cannot have the ability to be able to defend all the different disciplines. So we passed it back to the knowledge holders, and through this legislation, then they'll be given the powers to be able to promote and defend their interests. So you have a critical role in looking at this particular legislation, because it's an enabling legislation for organizations to do that. And eventually, it will also be a recognition of curriculum, which the indigenous knowledge holders do. We have done the traditional healers. We've been in Limpopo, Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, and Mpumalanga to establish what does it take to become a Sangoma? What is it that it takes to become an Inyanga or a Sejan? So we've established the norms and standards and looked at SAKWA qualifications and looked at the equivalent within the SAKWA qualification. So when the legislation is passed, we are ready to hit the road with the system. And we are currently piloting that in KwaZulu-Natal on Izinyanga and Izangoma and the like. So I thought I should just mention around the organizational structure, we are not going to organize them ourselves. They will organize themselves according to the disciplines of practice of competence. Thank you.
Thank you, Yona. Chair, your last comment or concern was about disputes that have arisen and might arise. I hope that both for you and for the committee, we've demonstrated that we've put in place everything that can reasonably put in place in terms of processes, structures, and procedures, which, if it once it is all complemented by this legislative framework, we've put everything in place that can reasonably be put in place to avoid disputes or to clarify them in future. You'll never be able to stop entirely disputes arise from whatever might irrational consideration might be driving them. But we've done everything that's reasonable, and with your help in passing this legislation, we will have created a system where disputes can be resolved rationally and within applicable law and customary practices as they are captured in Indigenous knowledge. Thank you.
I asked the question of on the thing of practitioners, how many is there in place and how many practitioners currently, because I heard in KwaZulu-Natal people were talking there were practitioners. I don't know if I understood misunderstood.
Thank you, Chair. I hope I will answer your question. There are two streams, basically. On the national recordal system, there are communities and IK holders. They are the knowledge holders of Indigenous knowledge. And if I may say, in terms of the national recordal system, I've just looked at the record now for Limpopo. We've got about 5,900 registered items on the system. I haven't looked at the system entirely. But when you look at the IK practitioners, those are mainly people within the disciplines of competence, whether they are Inyanga, Sangomas, and all of that. And there's quite a lot in the country, and they are mainly associated with traditional organizations such as your biggest two traditional THOs, Traditional Health Organization, and your PACHA, which is basically your two main nationals, and then there are smaller organizations as well. The research shows there are about 300,000 IK practitioners, and that research, I'm quoting it back to 2014, so there might be more now in terms of IK practitioners practicing within the traditional medicine domain.
Thank you very much. So how are you monitoring these practitioners? What systems is in place, or currently you don't if any systems, you're waiting for this bill. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. There is probably two tracks that we can look at this. There's a Traditional Health Practitioners Act under the Department of Health with an interim council that are responsible for the practice. So the registration and all that. Now, this hasn't been completely rolled out, so it's a process which is ongoing. Now, their role is to ensure that the clinical aspects of this work do not endanger the communities. So the registration is voluntary. We have not been privy to the number of people that they have put in there. It is to this extent that this act becomes important, because people will not register if they don't know the legal basis and the protection where they are working from. So to a certain extent, the numbers that Ms. Van Veek is speaking to are only voluntary. It's not the size of the traditional health practitioners. And then only how are we monitoring them? We in the Department of Science and Technology do not have yet any mandate that would say this knowledge has been misused, therefore we'll take you to court. But we've been asked from time to time to intercede in certain cases. One of them, which is a famous case, is the issue of rooibos in this province. So we have been involved in negotiating with big international corporations, such as Nestle, based in Lausanne, to reach an agreement with the knowledge holders and also under the auspices of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we have been facilitating this process. And this is what we see as a role in future of NICSO. It would facilitate to reach agreement, identify where the problems are, and assist members to come to a resolution. And if it's an international court case that will require litigation, we'll also find ways in which we can provide knowledge and information to the people that are involved. So NICSO is a facilitating office. It will be there for people to use. And you are right to say that it must be in the communities. And already we'll use the national recorder system as a basis for that.
Honourable Member, yeah, I was just looking at you. There's so many questions around that question that I asked. Over to you, ma'am, and then Honourable Safar.
Okay, I think we appreciate all the answers. Actually, they are helping us to open up into things that have been worrying. And if there will be regulations, it's actually the key, and I'm glad that you're having it on that. Because look at newspapers every day. And then you look at the list of Inyangas from outside of South Africa that are practicing here and actually going even to the wrong way of saying, I will enlarge a man's something, which is not right. We've never seen that even, and that's where it stops. And I'm sure, Gaute, we are hard hit where you find all this. And I'm sure with the public participation, those are the people that we go to newspapers that they must come to us. And regulating, it starts from there. But in housing, it's going to be also very difficult for them. We have a committee called Scrutiny of Subordinate Legislation. Once the minister regulates, it's not a blanket thing with us. All the regulations, they get a test again with us. So we'll be able to assist you, and I'm chairing it. We'll be able to assist you to get them on the ground. And you'll see the newspapers will have a problem of advertisement because we cannot advertise when we don't know where you come from, what kind of medication you are using or medicine, and it stopped there. That's where actually you got it. That's why we are saying, no, now then we are getting somewhere because that's where it starts. We want to protect this country and protect the knowledge that is in this country. If they want to be here, they must go with the processes of our government, and also how they bring things across the boundaries, that the Home Affairs must start helping us. You can't bring something that doesn't belong here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Gaute. Yeah, scrap everything. No, thanks. I want to check on the bio innovations. If you reach out the area called Gabahurutsi Bahamuirwa in Zerast at Mokola. where they've got this rich Muritela Tsweni and Khobedi Metsi. Also, if you go to the western side of Northwest, there will be the area where they've got Ngaparela, okay? Because those rich medicinal area. I'm not sure whether perhaps you do have them in your research. Thank you.
The honorable member has picked on a very good example around the Zerust on the bio-innovation, because we did receive a claim from that community. Now, the community did not organize themselves so well to be able to represent their interest. So we have an instrument which we call biocultural protocols. So we went into the community, brought the community together with the king or the leaders, the traditional leaders, and the local government in Zerust as well as part of that, and then so that they can get organized. It's only after that they were organized that then we supervised into the entry of an agreement. At the time, it was the Medical Research Council. And this particular project, we then funded it through the DST research funds so that they could taste these claims of this marvelous tea. And that is drunk in Zerust, and it has a lot of health potentials, probably more claims than the rooibos will have. And so the reason why this process had to be taken, so there's legal certainty from the community, who is going to be the beneficiary, how are they going to administer the their benefits through the social cultural protocol. And then the local government, so that it is a supervisor. It really doesn't have material interest in this. But it's an oversight for on behalf of the community as they enter into this agreement with the Medical Research Council. And so the work has been done. The products, I'm sure you saw them in Bombela. There were a lot of packets of different kinds of teas, and it was on display. They are looking at a trademark so that then they could agree on when it's going to hit the market. I've gone through this process just to indicate how we are setting standards of protecting the interest of the community, but also providing the scientists with an opportunity to come up with the innovations in the community, but under a regulated framework. And where possible, where we have funds, we will invest in that. It cannot be possible that we can find every claim in the country. There are too many of them. But where it is possible, and we see the great potential, such as in this particular tea, to the country and to the community, we will then prioritize and invest that. We haven't been to the further northwest, but somewhat this process will gain momentum as it becomes the legal framework of the country and people know what is happening. And it will require a lot of marketing from our sides and public awareness for people to understand what is involved. But I thank you for the example chosen from Zerust. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure that one would like to proceed with this question and answer session, because the more questions is coming out, in answers we're giving, the more questions is coming out, and so forth and so on. Very interesting things, I must say. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have you here, not only because the previous minister was there. I hope that you will proceed with the good work, as you did previously, so that I can change my mind about what the minister was driving you to be good. But thank you very much. I think we all are very excited about this bill, going out to our community to help you and to organize the community to buy in the bill. I'm sure I can understand you are saying that you're not coming for money, but I'm sure going forward, if you create the right thing, you will make your own money to develop other things to possible out there. Especially in the health sector, is there a working relationship between you and the health department? Thank you very much for your time, and I think if there is nothing else, this meeting, and I say it's again. Thank you very much.